You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
According to Webster's Dictionary, passion has several definitions. The more common is a powerful or compelling emotion or feeling, such as love or hate. One less used, but sums up a veterinarian's passion for his or her chosen field, is the state of being affected by something external, especially something alien to one's nature or one's customary behavior. It has to be passion. Why else would a sane human being place themselves in harm's way of hooves, claws, teeth, beaks, inordinately long days, communicable diseases that can kill, field work and research that can take you away from your family for months at a time, and all for the benefit of others who rarely say thank you? Why? Because veterinary medicine is one of the most fabulous vocations one could ever be a part of. My guest is Dr. Joe Kinarney. He is the 2015-2016 president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. We're going to chat about your passion for your pets and the role veterinarians play ensuring the health of people, animals, and the world. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Nature at its best is nature at its simplest. At Red Barn, we've kept it simple for 20 years by concentrating on single-ingredient natural dog treats. Because Mother Nature's actually pretty good at this. Bones are just tasty bones. Meat treats are just nourishing meat. It's nature at its simplest. Look at the label. We want you to. Red Barn Natural Treats. Simply the best. Find it in your local pet specialty store. Try our slow-roasted, natural meaty bones.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Kinarney, thank you so much for being a guest. This is truly an honor to have you as a guest today.
Dr. Cruz, it's absolutely a honor for me because, as you said, passion. And I have a passion for what I do. I have a passion for taking care of pets in my practice, but on the big level, the passion that veterinary medicine feeds the world and looks after the health of people.
Give us a little bit of a background of who is Dr. Joe Kinarney? How did you get to where you are now? Because you are definitely at a pinnacle of being a volunteer veterinarian organized medicine.
Well, I started out in a small community outside of Boston, and you know, someone asked me, when did you know you wanted to be a veterinarian? And I was about 4 or 5 years of age, and we had a beagle named Pepper who was pregnant, was in labor, couldn't deliver her puppies, and was probably my first knowledgeable exposure to a veterinarian. And, you know, he saved her in front of my eyes. I didn't get to see the surgery, but I had this dog that I thought was dying and came out with 5 live puppies. And it was our first experience because we had to hand raise the puppies. So I saw this man that just, to me, saved a life. And I just, after that point, I don't ever remember not wanting to be a veterinarian. And I was fortunate enough that I went to school in Kentucky and then on to Cornell Veterinary College. And during that time, became involved in the student activities and student organized veterinary medicine, and actually became president of the National Student Association. And so it was really a taste, and it was a taste of how we as a profession help mankind, not just the pets and the other part of what a veterinarian does on a daily basis, but how we actually interact. And so, through the course of the years to my state association in North Carolina, where I live now, and then getting into the national level. Probably my favorite thing that I ever did, I was vice president of AVMA in 1999 to 2001, and that job interacted with students and colleges and the National Student Association. And so I get to see the brightest and the best, and you saw their passion like I had, and I think I really have still, just go on, and it just invigorates you. So that process led, and I actually wanted to be vice president again, but couldn't repeat the job because of the Constitution, and then said, okay, I'll go on and try to become president.
I had the opportunity to be with you at a student function in Boston where AVMA just had its convention in July. And you came in and being surrounded by the students, oh, they were talking, they were having a fun time. And then all of a sudden you walked in and it was like the rock star came in. It's like, oh my goodness, Dr. Kanarni, and everyone's flocking around you. So it is awesome to see our next generation of veterinarians being so enthused by you and organized medicine. So that's one aspect of who you are. But here you also have this aspect of trying to, because some of the members of AVMA are a little on the mature side and going, I don't really seem to identify with it. That's one aspect. But now also you need to get our public to realize, and our congressmen and our senators to realize, how important veterinary medicine is to all of them. How would you define it? Why is veterinary medicine important, and how is it changing?
Well, you know, when you look at veterinarians, so most people think of the veterinarian as the person in the small animal hospital or maybe the horse doctor that goes out and treats our pets and companion animals. But veterinarians actually, you know, our primary goal, no matter what your path is in veterinary medicine, is public health. It is preserving and making sure that public health is strong and good. So when we look at that, and you look at veterinarians who oversee the food supply, we need a healthy food source in this country, and veterinarians are an integral part of that. And again, we look at public health, we look at the military. I was fortunate enough to be at Fort Sam Houston, where our veterinary military corps is, and what they do around the world, and you know, in the Army, you know, they show up before the troops do to ensure that there's a quality food source and supply and water supply, and if not, they have to make sure that that's brought in. So on all these bases, we serve the public not only by taking care of their pets, but by advancing health.
I had an opportunity a couple of years ago to work on a video for the AVMA with a young veterinarian. She had just graduated a year or two ahead of time, Shannon Mazanowski, if I'm pronouncing her name correctly. And I'm just fascinated because I keep getting updates from her that she's in Liberia and she's working on Ebola. So I think most people wouldn't think that a veterinarian would be involved in that level of public health. How does that work?
Well, I just happened to be at Kansas State University yesterday and speaking to a group, and it was actually, there's a U.S.-China consortium that is helping to educate Chinese veterinarians, and it's actually students. There are 16 now, but in the course of that discussion, they brought up the importance of veterinarians, and a DVM, a veterinary student, PhD, who is in her final year, was drafted by CDC to go to Africa along with another veterinarian because their knowledge was so great on how to deal with viruses, virology, and set up hospitals. And so the background that a veterinarian has is unique to any other profession in the world. We understand viruses, we understand bacteria, and in today's world, 80% of the emerging diseases are what we call zoonotic, or meaning both people and animals can get them. So having a veterinarian on the forefront is critical to controlling and watching out for these diseases.
One of the things I almost have to laugh, it was in the midst of the Ebola outbreak, and they were interviewing a MD on NPR and talking about Ebola, and she was talking about herd health. I smiled because I had never heard human medicine refer to a population of individuals as herd health. It's something we do a lot in veterinary medicine. So like, I think they're picking something up from us. I also was kind of fascinated too, looking at the AVMA website, which has some great information for pet owners, that the AVMA, it was having a collaborative effort trying to promote walking for people and pets. How did that come about?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. So I'm in Washington, D.C. right now, and I'm actually getting ready to head up to Capitol Hill. And then tomorrow, I actually meet at the Surgeon General's office to continue the discussion on this. But I was here in June, and I was talking to someone from the Surgeon General's office, and we were talking about One Health and the importance of all of us in looking at the One Health Initiative, or, you know, it's one small world, and all of us a part of that. And they said, you know, we ought to talk about it. So we actually came in, and the Surgeon General has, you know, a preventative health issue. And one of them was, you know, if we can increase the exercise of people, decrease obesity, this could help. And we said, you know, people, we have the same problem with dogs, is that the obesity is huge. And you know, you're looking at 40% of our dogs are obese. Why don't we come out with something where people can walk their dogs, and they're also, by helping their dog lose weight, they're also helping themselves. And so we made this as one of our first joint ventures. And again, hopefully our goal is public health.
And that is wonderful, because they are such great inducers of exercise. I practice in an area surrounded by a tremendous number of seniors, and sometimes the only thing that gets these people out and walking is going to be their pet, and it keeps them social, and it is just wonderful for everybody's health.
Yeah, you know, when you look at the value of pets, so we know that if you are sitting petting your pet, dog or cat, we know that it'll lower blood pressure. So just, you know, sitting on the couch petting your pet will lower blood pressure. We know that if you have a heart attack and come home to a pet, you're three times more likely to survive than if you come home and don't have a pet. And the other relation, you know, when we look at, in fact, discuss here in Washington, discussing a bill dealing with military people that have had military dogs, and they may have developed post-traumatic stress or some other issue, and how we can keep a dog with them and get a dog with them, we know that they recover faster.
I had an opportunity, it was actually a previous pet doctor segment, of talking to a trainer I've known for years who is a military veteran himself, and he has been working with veterans and getting therapy dogs to them. And sometimes he says it's just a matter of they can focus on that dog. They start getting nervous. They start getting agitated, and said, okay, the dog can sense it and brings them back down again. He says it's just had tremendous effects.
And so we're hoping with, as we continue into this One Health area, and we can really let our medical colleagues know that integrating pets into a therapy program could be beneficial, and the outcomes of those individuals could be very significant.
I'm talking right now with Dr. Joe Kinarney. He is the current president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. We're going to be right back after the short break, talk about some other really important topics affecting us here in the United States with our pets and worldwide. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's DesignerPetSweaters.com, hand-knitted designer sweaters for your precious pup or cool cat. Beautiful couture patterns for your pets, including custom-knitted formal wear, casual wear, yachting, and even sports-themed. Many designer pet sweaters include feathered tammy hats, top hats, and a lot of sparkle. Each sweater includes leg loops, front paw sleeves, and leash opening. Visit DesignerPetSweaters.com to order your four-legged fashions today. Your pets will stay warm for the winter and be runway ready. Large or small, we fit them all. DesignerPetSweaters.com.
Hi, I'm Dana Humphrey, also known as the Pet Lady. I travel from coast to pet trade shows and consumer events to scout out what the hottest, hippest, and most unique pet products are on the planet, bringing you tips and tricks from top veterinarians, groomers, trainers on how to safely travel and live happily with your pets. The Pet Lady will be in a city near you, showing off the latest and greatest tech, pet gadgets, cozy comforts, and fab gift ideas for man's and woman's best friends. You can learn more at thepetlady.net or connect socially and tweet with me at PetLadyWorld.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Canarney, I know one of the topics that is always concerned with pet owners is the cost of veterinary medicine. And there is a push right now, and I know you're in D.C., for all veterinarians to have to write prescriptions to their clients, whether or not they even ask for them, so they could have prescriptions filled elsewhere instead of having them filled at our practices. Pros and cons for that. I know I've had some concerns with my clients having a prescription and then it's not always filled the way that I've written it up.
You know, that's a very interesting question because we just had a discussion on that. And so if you look at it, the reality is it's a bill that Walmart is pushing to try to get people into Walmarts. And it is a bill that, if comes to fruition, would actually cost the pet owner more, because in my practice, which is a totally digital record-keeping practice, it means I would physically have to write a prescription, give it to the client, and then they could either give it back to me or they could take it. And that is just increases my cost, which obviously would be passed on to the pet owner. The other question comes in, so if someone in my practice wants a prescription, we gladly give it. Most of the time, especially if it's a antibiotic or something that's really important at that time, starting the treatment is important. They'll do that. But as you said, on the human side, human pharmacists are well educated when it comes to human medicine, human drugs, but they don't know the nuances of what happens in veterinary medicine. And I can give you an example of a client of mine that called and said their cat wasn't feeling well, it seemed to have a fever, should they do? And they said, oh, just give it some Tylenol. And they gave it a Tylenol, and then you know what happened from there.
It was a dead kitty.
Ended up in my clinic in critical condition from Tylenol. You know, really toxic. You know, you take chocolate in dogs. You know, we love chocolate, but, you know, you get too much dark chocolate and you'll wipe out the liver of a dog and they'll die. So there's differences, and that's kind of an everyday difference. And then, you know, you look at some of the sweeteners, xylitol, that we know that we as people use, and but it's toxic to dogs and cats. So there are some compounded drugs that have xylitol in it for people, and they'll just fill that not realizing it. So there's a big risk of trying to take a drug to a human pharmacist who's not trained in veterinary pharmacology. And so it's not necessarily in the best interest of the pets that we serve to try to go out that way. And, you know, there's a thought of, you know, are they going to save money? You know, so if you give your cat that Tylenol, I can assure you they didn't save any money. And again, there's maybe some areas that there could be some cost savings, but it's minimal.
What I also find fascinating has happened to me, and thankfully the pharmacists in the area seem to know if there's a question to give a call. But I've had some call going, oh, you're a silly veterinarian, you don't even know anything, filling a particular medication like thyroid supplement for dogs, where the concentration, the amount, the dose that you would give for a person is extremely small compared to what you give to a dog. So when I write the dog prescription, and they go, but it's a 30-pound dog, you know, this is totally inappropriate. And I say, you know, you're exactly right if this were a 30-pound person, but it's a 30-pound dog, so thank you for asking, but no, this is correct. So it doesn't always go pound for pound, and as you said, human pharmacists are not trained in veterinary pharmacology.
We see that. And great example with thyroid medication. I've had that happen a couple times, and it's like, no, you don't understand how a dog's body functions, and I can assure you this is the correct dose. And then you'll have a client saying, they look at it, and they're like, oh, my God, do you know what you're doing? And I said, I can assure you. And then, you know, we settle it. But and that's a big issue. And then sometimes, though, you'll have a pharmacist who doesn't consult you, and they just change the prescription. And I've had a couple go-arounds with that.
It's always so scary. You had brought up, Dr. Kinnarney, compounded medication. So yes, there are some medications that are made that contain xylitol, but there's sometimes medications that my own cat, I have an old girl cat who trying to put medication into her is hellacious. It just is not going to work. She does not believe it says DVM after my name. So I've had to have medication for her compounded into a tasty liquid form for her. Still a fight. What's the AVMA stance on having medications compounded from bulk into individual dosings?
Well, compounding from bulk forms is frowned upon. So, and right now we're going through a major legislative process on how do we deliver appropriate medications that are needed that are not manufactured by companies. So the AVMA stance is that we need to have a mechanism that these important drugs can be given to and available for our pets on the same hand, not skirting around FDA approval process to make sure these medications are appropriate. So it is a thin line right now on what we should and shouldn't be doing. Ultimately, we want to make sure that we can get the right medicine at the right time for the right pet.
And talking about antibiotics, antibiotics in food, you go and you go to the grocery store and you see, you know, this meat came from animals that were not antibiotic treatment. These chickens are cage-free. These food products don't have antibiotics. There's been a lot of back and forth and concern of the consumer of having food products that are tainted, that have antibiotics in them. Pros and cons. What's the AVMA stance on antibiotics in food stock?
So right now, you know, we're looking at, and actually I was just in Istanbul, Turkey, speaking to the World Veterinary Association on antibiotic resistance. And we spent the whole day on just talking about antibiotics, antimicrobials in the world. So what is coming out with the new veterinary feed directive is that veterinarians need to be prescribed appropriately by a veterinarian. And there are times that they need to be used. Today, a lot of farmers can just walk into a feed store, pick up antibiotics and use them as they seem fit. And so you have someone without a veterinary education using feed, and then these animals are getting in our food supply. And what's coming out of the feed directive is that veterinarians have to be involved in the process, and they need to make sure there's one, a client-patient relationship where the veterinarian has examined and is in contact with the patients, be it the food-producing animal and the owner, and then they will appropriately prescribe the food, and that antimicrobials should not be used just to try to promote weight gain. And so it's a balancing act, again, between maintaining food supply and food safety, on the same hand, not adding to the increase of resistance of antibiotics.
The other topic that really seems to be in the news right now are vaccines. People are coming in going, okay, I'm concerned about vaccinating my children, and now I have a puppy or a kitten, and it needs to be vaccinated. I'm not really sure. Is this going to be the best thing for it? Should we spread it out? Gee, it's a little itty-bitty puppy. It's a Chihuahua versus it's a Great Dane puppy. Don't you give less vaccine to that small dog? Here we go again, Dr. Kinnarney. What is the view of the AVMA on vaccines for pets?
Well, vaccines are critical in maintaining healthy pets in our society. You know, I've been around long enough that I know that I've seen dogs with distemper. I've seen dogs with parvo. And unfortunately, I've seen dogs with rabies. And during the course of the last few decades, we've greatly reduced these diseases because we've had a rigorous program. Now, do I think that a dog needs to be vaccinated for distemper or parvo every year? I don't. But do I think that you need to maintain an appropriate protocol and continue and make sure they receive the vaccine schedule that your veterinarian prescribes? Absolutely. We've been able in my life to more than double the life expectancy of the pets I've seen. And so now we're not seeing dogs with distemper. We're not seeing dogs with parvo. We're not seeing our patients have rabies. We're seeing other dogs that aren't taken care of have rabies. We're seeing other dogs that aren't taken care of have distemper. I hadn't seen distemper in 15 years, and we saw 3 cases last year. And they were dogs that had never been vaccinated, never cared for, and it was a rude awakening. It was a learning process for some of my younger veterinarians. We've seen rabies. And again, dogs that had never been to a veterinarian, never cared for, and just the human risk of a rabid animal is significant. So it's something that we have to do. We set up protocols. And again, I think if you look at the people side, and again, I'm going to date myself, but I had a classmate that had polio. I have a brother-in-law that had polio, and he is really struggling because it was affected one leg, and now the other leg is gone because of all the stress it's had during his lifetime. And so those diseases have been there, and so if you stop preventing them, people will start seeing them. So we have a generation of people that just haven't seen these diseases, and then they question the need for it. And I can assure you that diseases are there. And when you look at the thousands, I think it's like 60,000 people worldwide die of rabies.
Yes, I was going to say, I was doing some research, and they said it was about 60, 55,000 people yearly die of rabies. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh my goodness, that is horrible. And then at least the stats that I found, and they don't have exact numbers, from 2014, it was about 5,000 people died of Ebola. And I mean, that hits the news and everyone is just so aghast. Oh my goodness, it's going to be coming to the United States. But rabies is already here, and rabies is killing tremendous numbers worldwide. Why isn't that the headlines that the Ebola is?
Yeah, it's one of those diseases, rabies, that's been out there. And again, because we did such a good job for years in this country of vaccinating and preventing it, that people kind of forgot it. Again, I go back to polio. You know, when is the last time you've seen someone that
an iron lung? Who knows what an iron lung is?
And again, I think that's aging at least me.
I knew what it was.
Yeah, so we forget and we don't see it. And again, if you see an animal with this disease, it's like, oh my gosh, distemper's a horrible disease. Parvo's a horrible disease, but it doesn't affect people. Rabies is a horrible disease, but people get it. And again, 50 to 60,000 people die a year in the world from rabies, and we spent billions in this country. In the United States, we spent billions on Ebola, on the fear, and again, it got the public's attention, it got the press's attention, but something that we see frequently has not.
There's just so much out there that I know I'm prejudiced that veterinary medicine makes this impact on everyone's lives. It can oftentimes be behind the scenes. They're not aware of it. If you were to give that 3-minute stump talk that you're probably going to be giving to your senators, to the congressmen you're going to be seeing right now in D.C., why do they need to fund veterinary medicine? What makes veterinary medicine so critical to the health and welfare of the United States?
So again, if you go back, you know, in today's age of homeland security and other issues, the introduction of a pathogen that would affect people and animals, or even just animals. So if you take something in that wipes out our food supply, or our beef, our swine, our chickens, and it would be devastating not only to our economy, but it would affect our food supply. And having a veterinarian in that process is critical to making sure that doesn't happen. I mean, we have veterinarians that work in homeland security looking at dealing with and preventing the introduction of diseases into this country. If you look at, again, the public health issue, and you look at West Nile disease, a disease that came into this country, the last foreign-born disease, I guess if I exclude Ebola, that got introduced into this country, and unbeknown to CDC and the medical doctors, it was diagnosed by a veterinarian. And they said, no, this is not an encephalitis. This is a newborn disease. And the only way she was a veterinarian at the Bronx Zoo, got the point across is she had a press conference, laid out the data and said, this is a new disease in this country. And she was right. So they wouldn't listen to her. And then it was like, oh my gosh, you know, this veterinarian actually diagnosed it when CDC said it was Eastern encephalitis, a disease that's been here. So having a veterinarian in the mix, having the training that we have is so unique compared to any other profession. It's critical, again, just for homeland security, let alone public health and safety.
Dr. Kanarni, I think we could keep going on for a long time with this.
Fun.
I thank you. But that was a little beeper in the back that says, all right, we're going to have to maybe at least have part two for this sometime in the future because there's so much to cover. Dr. Karnani, thank you so much. I appreciate the fact that you are helping my profession and that you're also helping the American public and the world.
And thank you on behalf of the 87,000 veterinarians that AVMA represents. I want to thank you for the outreach you do for us and helping the pet-owning public understand veterinary medicine and the need to take care of their pets and their society. Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.